Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This podcast was presented by David Lowe & Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. Live from the Edmore Sawgrass Cadillac Studios, Morse has more. Visit EdmoreSawgrass.com. This is the Alex Dono Show on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
Yes! Oh, it is. It is. The 8 o'clock hour, my friends, of the Alex Dono Show. We are here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Always streaming on the internet 24 hours a day at WQAM.com or on your smartphone, TuneIn Radio app, radio.com app. Those also work for your tablet, just FYI. If you'd like to get in tonight and share your infinite wisdom with us via the phone lines, 305-567-0560, 954-567-0560, pound 560 on your cell, or you can text us at 56022 on the plumbers911.com text line. 825, we've got clickbait coming up. I got a story about people joining the Mile High Club and getting in very, very big trouble, and a story about dogs, which I think you'll enjoy and probably agree with many of you. So you have that to look forward to a little bit later. 8:45, our buddy Martin Botter from ESPN Deportes will join us for some soccer talk tonight. My Inter Milan team is still unbeaten, my friends. Going for that Scudetto, going for that Serie A title, going for Champions League next year. We have a lot to talk about here this evening. Phone calls open, phone lines open at 567-0560. How do you feel about what was released today, the news that broke today, that Kiko Alonso did get fined, not suspended, and certainly was not kicked out of the game last week, but he did get fined for the hit on Joe Flacco, $9,115. How they come up with a figure so exact is beyond me. But $9,115, Kiko fined, and yet Ndamukong Suh was not fined for grabbing the throat of Ryan Mallett. Do you agree with either or both or neither of those decisions? I thought neither guy should have been fined. Yeah, I think they made the right call with Suh, since Mallett came at him like a kamikaze, like very stupid what Ryan Mallett did. And so, yeah, it sounds crazy to think that, 300-pound Ndamukong Suh was defending himself by grabbing a guy's throat. But I thought that the film backed that up. It's not like he sought him out. I know that Ndamukong Suh is known for stomping on quarterbacks and doing dirty things after plays over the years. Like, this was not an instant of that. Ryan Mallett came at him, and he was defending himself. So I thought that that was valid. And obviously the NFL agrees with me, since the league decided not to fine him. And then with Kiko Alonso, I think the reason why he was fined, and it's a relatively small amount of money. I know that if, like, regular people like you and I were fined over $9,000, that's a big deal. NFL player gets fined $9,000, not as big of a deal with the game checks that they clear. I think it was a token fine. I think you have to. The league has drawn this line in the sand that if you put a questionable hit on a quarterback, you hit him in the head, shoulder to head, helmet to helmet, you put any kind of a questionable hit on a quarterback, and they're going to fine you financially. I don't know how else you fine somebody. They will hit you financially because they want to send that message that you need to learn a different way to tackle that doesn't involve hitting a quarterback in the head. And if you do that, even if it's not on purpose, because I don't think that that was the case with Kiko. I may sound like a Dolphins homer, but I think that Kiko, by the time Flacco slid, was very delayed in doing so. I know that the slow motion replay, when you slow it down like the Zapruder film, looked a lot more egregious, but then you watch it in live speed, it was a bang bang play. That was the phrase that defensive coordinator Matt Burke used to describe it, bang bang play. And I thought that the live action replay backed that up. Slow motion, made it look a lot more malicious. Live action, I don't think Kiko had time to change his direction on that play. So I don't like the fact that he got fined for that because I don't believe it was voluntary. But the league has made it very clear that if you hit a quarterback like that, whether it's malicious and voluntary or incidental or somewhat incidental, it doesn't make a difference to them. They are going to fine you. Obviously, had it been a dirty hit, a dirtier hit, they would have fined him significantly more than $9,000. But I think the league said that the league has drawn a clear line in the sand that they are going to hit you financially anytime you hit a quarterback in the head. But we'll hear from some more Miami Dolphins as they prepare for this Sunday night matchup with the Oakland Raiders. Cameron Wake, he always speaks on Fridays. He addressed the media today. I love anytime you run a question like this by Cameron Wake, the answer is always predictable because he is very big on saying that every game is as important. There are no games that are bigger than other games. I give 100% effort every game. It doesn't matter the situation. Here is Cameron Wake asked if playing Sunday night football is extra special to him.
Not really. I like playing football. It doesn't matter if it's, I won't say Thursday, but it doesn't matter if it's Sunday or Sunday morning, Sunday night, London. I just enjoy playing the game.
You notice he said, I don't want to say Thursday because everybody hates Thursday night football. I mean, that is universal. I have never talked to an NFL player who is cool with Thursday night football. They all hate it. They all despise it. And I'm not going to use that as an excuse for the Dolphins losing to the Ravens last week because, you know, 40 to nothing. Doesn't matter if you played on a Thursday or a Wednesday or a Friday. 40 to nothing means you were not prepared for that game and the other team outmanned you in every way, shape, or form. So I'm not using that as an excuse, but Thursday night football, you get nothing done in the week leading up to that. You can't, especially when you're the team that has to travel, you can't hold a real practice. You're doing walkthroughs 2 days in the week. Like, you can't do any sort of contact whatsoever when you're going from Sunday to Thursday. And, you know, you don't really have time to prepare film-wise. It's better if you're playing a divisional opponent, actually. Like, if the Dolphins had played the Jets or the Bills that week, you know, the divisional teams you're more familiar with, I think that makes the short preparation a little bit easier. But Thursday night football, and of course the risk for concussions and all that, is higher. Very hypocritical of the league to be so against concussions, yet so pro Thursday night football because they make all that money. All these guys hate Thursday night football, Cam Wake included. But at least they got that extra couple of days off from Thursday to Sunday. Here's Cam Wake saying that players were extra refreshed this week after their mini bye.
I think guys were refreshed. I like to think guys got time to do whatever, whether it's get away from the game, whether it's to get some extra treatment, or, you know, whatever thing you needed as an individual to help you, you know, get through the rest of the season. I think guys took the time to do that, and I think it was a good week of practice.
Texter writes in, honestly, Thursday night games should only be played by teams coming off their bye weeks. That's what they do for college football. I think you have to have at least 5 days between games. I think that's how they do it for college. It should be the same way with the NFL, but then they wouldn't be able to schedule a Thursday night game every week. They would have to start it around Thanksgiving like they used to do back in the day. Here is Cam Wake asked a pretty interesting question that he gave a good answer to. How do you measure pass rushing success against quarterbacks who get rid of the football quickly? In other words, if the quarterback has a quick release and you can't always get to him, how do you measure the success of a pass rush?
I've always thought that it's, you know, I'm eventually me. I'm say I, we, as a front. We're eventually going to get there, no matter what. Just depends on whether the quarterback has the ball or not. And, you know, you could control what you control. Whether he has it, that's not necessarily in your control, but the reality is at some point, you know, especially with the guys we have in the back end, at some point they're going to hold it. And, you know, you got to trust that those guys are going to do their job. And you have to say, this is going to be the play that I'm going to get the opportunity to get to the quarterback. Because if you do the opposite, say, all right, well, he's throwing the ball quick, I'm not going to rush, then that's the play where you're sitting back there 5 seconds and heaving it down the field. So you have to have a short memory, and you have to have a lot of confidence in yourself and say, every single play, this is the play I'm going to get there, this is the play I'm going to get there. I trust in my guys. And, you know, from a measurement standpoint, if you beat your guy, whether the ball's there or not, to me, that's doing your job.
And building on what Wake just said there, he gives here what I think is like a really valuable football lesson You know, like when you're watching a game with a friend or a family member who, you know, only watches a couple games per year, they don't really know what's going on. Whenever you see, like in the NFL especially, you see a deep ball completed, 30, 40, 50-yard bomb completed, you always look to say, oh, who was the corner who got burned on that play? Was it Byron Maxwell? I know he's no longer in Miami, but you look for the guy to blame for getting beaten deep. What happened to Xavien Howard on that play? Your impulse reaction is to blame the corner, but I thought Cam, who, yeah, I mean, he's a defensive end. He's very accountable for this, and I think he wants to take some heat off of the defensive secondary for this stuff. He points out here, I think rightfully so, that when you're getting beaten deep on a 50, 60-yard bomb, usually that's the fault of the defensive ends, the fault of the defensive line for not putting pressure, more so than it's on the corners.
General teaching for the lay football watcher that when they see a long pass and a corner got beat or safety got beat on a 60-yard bomb, you know, all that guy got beat, you know. But in this league, there's nobody that can – a corner couldn't cover me for 10 seconds, and I'm not a receiver. So eventually, you know, the receiver's going to get open. And as a pass rush, it's my – if you throw a 70-yard pass, that's my fault as a pass rusher. Not my, but, like, we as a front. So – we definitely work hand in hand, you know, short drops and short, quick passes. You know, I feel like, hey, listen, you guys challenge those, you know, routes, concepts, whatever it may be. And when it's a long route, you know, that's our chance to say, listen, we're not going to put you in that situation. We're going to get there, you know, regardless of what circumstances are.
And lastly here from defensive end Cameron Wake, who spoke to the media today, he was asked a question about whether, you know, coming off of a 40-0 loss, playing a really pivotal game this week, because the difference between 5-3 and 4-4, it's monumental. It's huge, right? I mean, if the Dolphins come away this weekend victorious and they're 5-3, you're thinking, okay, you're in the playoff hunt still. 4-4, you're saying, all right, this is obviously a bad team getting exposed again. Completely different feeling this week. So Wake was asked if like players get up, if you have an emotional peak in important games like this, and I thought his answer was pretty cool and pretty honest.
I don't like spikes. I don't like roller coasters. I'm not a fan of extra. Like, for instance, Sunday night, we're going to play harder because it's Sunday night. So then what were you doing Sunday at 1 o'clock? What were you doing Thursday night? If there's an extra, then to me, and I could say that to any football player, then you've already been withholding something that you should have been giving. It should be a maxed out effort week in and week out, no matter what time the game is, no matter who you're playing, no matter if y'all lost 10 straight, you won 10 straight, you're going against an all-pro, you're going against a rookie who's never played. There's no let up. It's your 100-mile-an-hour fastball every pitch until your arm falls off. That's the only way you can play this game. And if you're out there throwing lobs because it's not a great hitter and then you're waiting for a hitter to come up, then, you know, you're wasting opportunity. So me, I'm swinging for the fences every play. I don't care who's pitching.
And I believe that's true with Wake. I don't think you can keep playing at that high of a level at 35 years old if you are not treating every play like it's the most important play you've ever taken part in. Like, that's the way that Cam Wake approaches every play in practice, every play in the game. I do believe that about him. I just don't believe that's true for everybody. I don't. And, you know, I know that sometimes, like, fans will underestimate the idea that, hey, this guy took a game lightly, but isn't it pretty obvious that several Dolphins players have been guilty of that throughout the year? If every guy had Cameron Wake's attitude that each play is as important as the last and as important as the one coming up next, if everybody had that attitude, you wouldn't be in a spot right now where the offense can't score any points, the offensive line can't block, Jay Ajayi wouldn't have been traded this week if everybody treated every play the way that Cameron Wake does. So clearly, and I believe Cam when he says it, because I see it. I see the way that guy prepares. I see the way he approaches practice and games. When Cameron Wake says, I'm not a fan of emotional peaks and valleys and roller coasters, I treat every game, whether it's a Thursday night game or a 1 o'clock Sunday game or a Sunday night game, Monday night game, I treat every game like it's the most important game and most important moment of my life. I believe that from him. Unfortunately, I don't think it's true for the majority of Miami Dolphins players, especially guys on the offensive side of the football, because you wouldn't be in the spot that you're in right now if everybody had Cam Wake's attitude. I hope that Adam Gase is sending that message effectively to his locker room that you guys need to think the way that Cam Wake does. I know that's why he's trying to ruffle these feathers on offense. That's part of the reason why Jay Ajayi is now in Philadelphia, is that Gase is trying to send that message of accountability and preparation. Hopefully Cam Wake is being used as a very specific example that if you approach every snap and every game the way that this guy does, we wouldn't be in a situation where we're getting beaten on every play. New edition of Clickbait coming up next here on WQAM.
We know you spend a lot of time online. Well, so do we. Here's tonight's edition of Clickbait on the Alex Dano Show.
Ah, Clickbait. I want to start getting a little political. Oh, God forbid. It's not really getting political. I voted for Gary Johnson, so I'm immune from like any political discussion. But you saw this story about how Donald Trump's Twitter was deleted. His account was deleted for about 11 minutes by what he described as a rogue Twitter employee, which was kind of true because it was the last day for a Twitter employee who I guess thought it would be fun to delete the president's Twitter account for 11 minutes. And okay, the reaction to this, as you would expect, anything involving Trump, very polarizing. Part of the reaction to it are people saying, God bless that Twitter employee who deactivated his account for 11 minutes. I want to buy this guy a pizza. This is an awesome human being. How hilarious is that? And then, of course, other people saying, this is ridiculous. How dare they try and silence the president? What's going on here? Let me tell you where I stand on this. Weird thing to say, but, and I'm not saying I think Trump is awesome at Twitter and he should keep doing what he's doing because his tweets have, you know, they may get you into a war with North Korea. I don't like that idea. But I do think it is wrong for a rogue Twitter employee to delete his account because that makes me wonder, like, where does it end with these guys? If allegedly hundreds of employees at Twitter have credential enough to delete anybody's account that they want to, I'm also worried that a Twitter account would be hackable. And maybe the guy shouldn't be on Twitter in the first place, but what if a Twitter employee decides, you know what would be fun? To make fun of Kim Jong-un on Trump's account. Let me hack his account. Like, I'm afraid of where this might end because he gets into enough trouble on Twitter by himself. The idea that Twitter employees would have access over something like this. And by the way, Twitter is getting rid of nudity, which is also a very troubling thing. But yeah, listen, it may have been kind of a fun story to read last night, but it does kind of concern me as to how much power these Twitter operators actually have. So that's the political story for the day. How about this one? I've been saying for years that human beings care more about puppies than they do about other human beings. We finally have the scientific data to back it up. This is crazy. In a study published in the Journal of Society and Animals, about 240 student volunteers looked at fake newspaper stories, hashtag fake news, about attacks on both dogs and people. The four stories were about a victimized one-year-old baby, 30-year-old adult, a puppy, or a six-year-old dog who was beaten with a baseball bat by an unknown assailant and left unconscious with a broken leg and multiple lacerations. Empathy levels for the puppy, then for the older dog, and for the baby human were on similar levels when the researchers polled their volunteers, with the adult human coming in last. So the empathy levels for a beaten puppy, six-year-old dog, and baby human being, thankfully, because hopefully people should care about babies, came in a lot higher than the empathy you would have for an adult human being getting beaten. And listen, I've long thought this way because, Biff, every time you're watching a movie, what are the saddest movies? Marley and Me, Old Yeller, where the dog, spoiler
alert.
Lassie. Did Lassie die? I don't think Lassie ever died.
I don't know, but I think Lassie did. I have to look that one up.
Oh, my God. Now you just ruined Lassie for me. But it's the movies where something bad happens to the animal, or even like Homeward Bound, it pulls at your heartstrings to see the dog get lost, and he's got to cross the country. Free Willy, like stories about animals pull at the heartstrings more than stories about grown human beings. So it does not surprise me to see we have these scientific data to back it up. It says subjects did not view their dogs as animals, but rather as fur babies. That sounds like a very millennial term. They're not animals. They're fur babies or family members alongside human children, the study said. So there you go. We have the scientific data to back up the idea that people care more about dogs than they care about other people. Not surprising at all. Now we go to a sick, depraved story, my friends. This is weird. Not surprising, though, in any way, shape, or form. And, of course, one of these people is from Florida, of course. Two strangers were caught engaged in a sexual act on a Delta Airlines flight from Los Angeles to Detroit on Sunday night, airline official said. The 48-year-old woman and 28-year-old man, so he trapped himself a cougar, 48-year-old woman and 28-year-old man who have not been publicly named, reportedly had not met before the flight, during which they engaged in a sexual act that I cannot name because I may get in trouble, but they engaged in a sexual act while they were both in their seats. Wow, police told WDIV in Detroit. See, that's the big problem there. If you're going to join the Mile High Club, you've got to find a way into that bathroom. Like, you can't just sit in your seat and expect to get away from it, away with it. That's the problem there. The man was flying to Detroit to catch a connecting flight to Miami. So, of course, Florida man. While the woman was going to catch a connecting flight to Nashville. The act within itself is very inappropriate in a public space, a passenger on the flight said. There are children, she added. There are families. There are seniors. These things should be respected. FBI officials, how embarrassing is that? You got lucky on a plane, and now the FBI is involved. FBI officials told WDIV Local 4 in Detroit that the incident is still being investigated and that the man and woman could be charged with a misdemeanor or felony. Both were issued citations. FBI officials said that the man and woman could be charged as early as next Tuesday. A Delta spokesman declined a request for comment by the Washington Post. So there you have it, my friends. If you're going to join the Mile High Club, you got to be careful. You got to be very, very careful there to at least try and get into that lavatory before you do that. Don't smoke in the lavatory because they'll catch you immediately with the smoke detector. And if you disable the smoke detector, they'll catch you. But if you're going to join the Mile High Club, it's got to be done in the lavatory. Fur babies sound like Furbies, a texter writes, and those were total millennial toys. I remember the Furbies. Don't forget Turner and Hooch. I don't remember how that ended. That was with Tom Hanks, right? Turner and Hooch, movie about a guy and a dog. Was that one sad? I don't even remember. I know that I saw that way back in the day, but I don't remember if Turner and Hooch actually pulled at my heartstrings or not. Young Biff, are you too young to remember Turner and Hooch?
I have no idea what that is, like, at all. But I have a Lassie update.
What is that?
So Lassie and Lassie Comes Home was weakened at one point after falling from a waterfall.
Oh, jeez.
But lived and came home eventually.
Now, again, you're probably too young to remember this because this was like a movie from the 80s that I grew up watching. There was this movie, really popular animal movie called Milo and Otis. But then years later, it became very controversial. In the 80s, nobody really cared about like animal cruelty. Like that in the 90s is when people started to care about that. But they realized that the movie Milo and Otis, they had this scene where, like, the cat would go down a waterfall, and apparently they did that scene with actual cats, and a bunch of cats died making the movie. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Oh, my God. It's ridiculous. Awful.
They found, like, multiple alleged incidents of animal cruelty. Oh, this movie, I loved this movie when I was a kid. It was, like, the whole movie, you know, this was before they had, like, CGI, and they could really make the animals talk. So it was just a dog and a cat running around, like, for the entire movie. And they just had, like, Dudley Moore, like, doing the voices, like, narrating.
Is that, like, the original Jungle Book where they have just have, like, picture of the wildcat or whatever it is, the panther, and then it's just talking, and you're like...
Yeah, like, it's just, like, it's not, like, the mouth isn't moving, but the animal's just magically talking. But it was a great movie. Really tugged at my heartstrings. But then, you know, when I get a little bit older and the 90s roll around and PETA starts investigating crap and getting crap done... You find out, like, a bunch of cats and dogs died when they were making that movie. Like, is it worth it, man? Is it worth it? Oh, Turner and Hooch had a good ending, texture writes, for everybody, including the dog. There you go. I can't believe we needed a study, a texture writes, to determine whether or not a human cares more about an animal than a human. All you would have to do is ask me, and I could tell you I like animals more, and I know a lot of people who feel the same way. It does seem like kind of a waste of money for a study. And I know that you get research grants to do this stuff, so I'm guessing it was probably private money that contributed to that study. But maybe if more people put private money into, let's say, finding a cure for cancer, hello? Like, if you're going to get, like, seven figures together to fund a study, like, how do you come to the decision that, you know what I'm going to do? I'm a rich, wealthy philanthropist. I would like to fund a study. Let's see. I can either fund a cancer study, or there's this really awesome, rad study being conducted where they would like to figure out if people care more about animals than other. I think I'm going to fund the animal study. Like, I don't know how people come to that conclusion. I hope it costs like $100 to do that study. Need more cancer studies, damn it. That's my easy stance of the day. Oh, I thought you had something to say. You looked at me like all wide-eyed.
Oh, not at all. I was just kind of doing this. You got to stressing me out.
Biff is stressed out about the Marshall Thundering Herd and the FAU Owls. They took the damn score off the TV. What's the score now, Biff? Are the Owls still
23-16 FAU.
Hey, you'll be fine. Lane Kiffin, have faith in the guy. He's succeeded everywhere he's been, right? I was in the fourth grade, Texter writes, and they played Milo and Otis in school. Oh, was Michael Vick consulted in that study, he says? Oh, man.
Virginia Tech alumni.
That's right. And that was a good player, man. Michael Vick was dangerous. Very dangerous. He beat the Canes in 99, but then in 2000, which was his last year, I think he was hurt. And Miami was the better team that year. 2000, that was when they got robbed. They should have been in the BCS title game. But they got a little bit lucky because I think Michael Vick only played like half of that game. He got hurt in that game. I think Grant Noel was the other. I don't know why I remember really random. I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, but I remember the 2000 matchup between Miami and Virginia Tech. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Going to talk some soccer, some football when we come back. Our buddy Martin Botter from ESPN Deportes is in the building. Got to talk to him about my Nerazzurri. Winning games, getting big wins and big draws, my friends. Coming for that Scudetto, coming for that Champions League next year. Also got to ask Martin, what is wrong with Real Madrid? I'm enjoying their losses. Way too many Real Madrid bandwagon fans around here who just like they hop on the bandwagon, they pretend they've been there their entire lives. Got to get to the bottom of what's wrong with them. Cristiano Ronaldo, can he fix it?
Real Madrid.
Oh, you son of a, you know what? The Alex Dono Show continues here on WQAM.
Cadillac Studios. Morse has more. Visit EdmoreSawgrass.com. This is the Alex Dono Show on South Florida's sports leader. 25 years and counting. Miami Sports Radio, WQAM.
Hold on, hold on. Hey, y'all get some more drinks going on. I sound a whole lot better. Listen,
who is this, Drake?
Yes, sir.
I actually got that right. I totally took a shot in the dark there. I'm impressed with myself.
It's a new wave music, too. I'm pretty impressed with you, Dono. It's not from the 90s or, you know, your wannabe 80s, maybe.
Honestly, like I was making a joke there because I had no idea what this was. I thought it'd be funny if I just throw out Drake, and I was correct. I'm so proud of myself right now.
It's called Passion Fruit.
Passion fruit. I do. I also enjoy passion fruit. I tell you that. It's one of my top 15 favorite fruits, passion fruit. I love it. Going to talk some soccer here. Our very good friend, Martin Botter from ESPN Deportes, is with us. And you told me before the segment, not to put any pressure on you, but you told me that you had a USA soccer announcement. I had forgotten USA soccer exists since I've got to wait another 5 years to watch them in the World Cup. But what is going on with USA Soccer?
Hi, Alex. Well, I'll bring it back to the forefront with this. Paul Caligiuri, which is an obscure name, but you might remember him from the 1990 and 1994 World Cups. He played for the U.S. national team every single game in those two World Cups.
Yeah, okay.
Well, he's on Twitter an hour ago with this announcement. I am officially announcing my candidacy for U.S. Soccer Federation President, hashtag Goal 2019 and 2022.
So should he get this job?
Well, I want to see what the other candidates are, whether Wijnaldum gets into the mix.
Yeah, Wijnaldum, I remember as well.
But I'm all for change. I'm all for change. And if it's someone that knows about growth, about renaissance, about bringing U.S. soccer back from the ground up, then I'm all for it. Because, like I said, he played in the 1990 World Cup. That was the first one of the streak that That's the right. U.S. just broke by not going to this World Cup. So he knows what it's like to be down and out and surging back from that. So I wouldn't have a problem with him. I would rather have him than the incumbent who has just made everything worse.
It's a joke.
It is what it is. When you do things wrong, when you have leadership just bombing at every level, then you're going to lose to Trinidad and Tobago and you're going to miss the World Cup. And you have only yourself to blame.
With that said, as I look for a silver lining here, do you think that this epic failure of 2017, not qualifying for the World Cup, could this be a positive kick in the pants long term? Because we've seen Bruce Arena step down. Hopefully we have a great head coach coming up. Hopefully we have a new head of operations that's really going to see the urgency here. Do you think in the long run, and of course it's terrible to miss a World Cup, but in the long term, could this be a good thing? Because this is now giving USA Soccer a kick in the pants, where instead of treading water with a bunch of failures, they now realize they need to shake things up and rattle the cage.
And not only that, but 2026, the World Cup that year could be here.
That's
with
right.
the majority of the matches here. So you need to clean up your image as a team, as a country that wanted to be a powerhouse not that long ago, that was dreaming of the World Cup semifinals and going head-to-head with the Argentinas and Germanys of the world, and now they can even beat Trinidad and Tobago. So you gotta look at yourself in the mirror and say, okay, what are we doing wrong? We're staying in MLS all comfy in our own backyards and not going to Europe to challenge ourselves. And the leadership, they're not scheduling friendlies that are hard enough for the U.S. They're staying in their CONCACAF bubble, and that harmed the U.S. long term. And from here to 2022, I want to see the U.S. playing powerhouses in every single friendly, or at least most of them, because playing Guatemala and Honduras and Jamaica in World Cup qualifying isn't going to give you the barometer that you need.
It's not preparing you for anything.
Exactly. And then you lose to Trinidad and Tobago, and you're shocked, and you're like, what happened? Well, you didn't prepare yourself well enough, and that was the result.
You know, you mentioned the possibility of World Cup back in the United States in 2026. I remember the World Cup of 94. I remember the excitement in this country. But one thing I remember being angry about was not one game in Miami. The closest they came was Orlando. There was not one game in Miami in that 94 World Cup. If the World Cup comes back here in 2026, you think they will be smart enough to know that Hard Rock Stadium should be hosting games?
I am actually surprised that there wasn't one in Miami. I was 7 years old at the time.
Yeah.
I didn't know every site of the World Cup, but the Orange Bowl was there.
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
You know, and I remember it only because my father and I would have loved to have gone to a game or two, and the closest they came was Orlando, and just didn't work out. Like, you know, I was 8 years old at the time, or 9 years old, something like that. And it just didn't work out to go out of town to watch a game. We would have loved to have had a game in Miami. There were none.
Well, I'll tell you what. Now that Hard Rock Stadium has become a staple of big-time events, and the 2021 college football playoffs is going to happen there. No, the championship.
Yes,
sorry.
The championship, yeah.
It's going to happen there. And it's just a state-of-the-art, beautiful stadium. Major props to Stephen Ross for putting his own money into that. 2026. In Miami, with the Latin presence that there is here, and it's only going to increase in the next decade, I would think it's a no-brainer, and it would be really stupid for them not to have one.
I have to ask you about this because there are a lot of bandwagon Real Madrid fans who listen to this show. A lot of people who claim they've been fans of that team their entire life. What's wrong with Real Madrid right now? Drop two straight? Are they looking for answers?
I think it's a hangover sort of thing from what was a first semester of the year that was magical, winning the Champions League, being champions and just like smashing it in Barcelona's face, like in your face after your decade of dominance.
That's
it's
right.
Our turn now. And now they are third in the league, which is not catastrophic. They're 8 points back of Barcelona. But the problem is that they are losing to teams like Girona,
right,
who have no business beating them. And with the political undercurrent that there is in Spain right now, that just takes on a whole other dimension. So what's wrong with Real Madrid right now? It's just a hangover. It's also the players that were playing in World Cup qualifying, like Cristiano Ronaldo and others, that are just emotionally spent from having to take their teams to the World Cup. And now, in a month, you have the Club World Cup, which is another challenge for Real Madrid. Not really that big of a challenge because Pachuca and an Asian team and Lanús or Gremio from South America shouldn't be anything that is actually able to beat them. But you know that you have to do that in a month. And the Champions League also, look at Tottenham. Look at how they humbled Real Madrid. Premier League teams historically have had trouble with Real Madrid and Barcelona. But now, Tottenham took them down a notch. And it's time to reassess for Zidane and be like, okay, what am I doing wrong? Because I have the talent, and with players like Cristiano Ronaldo, Isco, and just a roster that could have three different teams if they wanted and be at the top of the La Liga table, there's no excuse for them to be at this moment on such a slump.
And for this Cristiano Ronaldo, I can only imagine how much pressure there is being the face of soccer worldwide and also having to deal with the tax evasion distractions and having to play so many matches internationally and with Real Madrid. Could it be wearing on him right now, having to deal with so much, having so much on his plate in life?
No doubt about it. He's only human. He's superhuman on the field, but he's only human off of it. So there could be a factor of mental weariness. And like I said, last semester he prepared himself to be at the top of his game in that Champions League final, and he did it. So now, in this second semester where there isn't that much at stake, Champions League is just revving up. The La Liga is on its first third of the calendar.
Yeah.
And like I said, the Club World Cup, not that big of a deal. So it's almost like, okay, I got a gorilla on my back. Portugal is safely in the World Cup. Now I got to rev myself back up for 2018, because now he not only has to be in top form for the Champions League final, but also for Russia in 2018.
That's right. Martin Bader is our guest from ESPN Deportes, does a great job covering soccer and basketball. Now, you know, I have to ask you about my Nerazzurri, who are doing pretty well in the Serie A right now. Second place behind Napoli. They haven't lost a match. They've had 9 wins, 2 draws so far this season. And you know, I'd love to see them in the Champions League next year. They need a top 5 spot in Serie A, because I know that being in the Champions League will help you attract more talent. What do you think about the run that my team is on?
I love it because you are actually doing it the right way.
Right.
From the back to the front. The defensive, the solid defense is powering up the offense.
Yeah, this Milan Skriniar is unbelievable, this kid.
Yeah, exactly. So because your defense is so solid, your offense doesn't feel like it's pressing. So it's actually making it more efficient. Mm. So that's how Inter is finally back on the forefront of Italian soccer after such a long time,
yeah,
where it was
7
frankly
years.
Irrelevant. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now with Icardi and others that are young and also taking on a leadership role, then you have a championship contender for the first time in a long time. Now, Napoli is in first place. They look formidable. It was a 0-0 tie, if I'm not mistaken,
yes,
the last time that you faced them.
Well, which was actually really big because Inter has not won in Napoli. They've not won a game there since 1997. So just getting a draw was like a victory.
Yeah, and Juventus is nipping at your heels, Lazio and Roma behind you. So you can't just be like, okay, we're content with 9-2-0 and nothing. No, you got to make it to the Champions League.
Yes.
Even if you don't win the title. You want to finish in the top 4 and make it to the Champions League, which will give you a lot of revenue to bring in even more players.
Right. And also, a lot of players don't want to go to a team that's not in the Champions
exactly.
League.
Exactly, because it's the biggest it's the biggest window you have to secure your value as a player. So make it to a Champions League. If you win the title, great. But the first step is finishing in the top 4, bringing in even more talent next season. And then, it's title or bust for Inter after
Love
such
it.
A long time.
And I had a basketball question for you. It's a little offbeat, but you were telling me before the show that there's a guy who's a writer whose name is Aaron Gordon, and people are starting to get mad that they're confusing him for the Orlando Magic's Aaron Gordon.
Oh, yeah, it's hilarious. He actually had a direct message conversation with a guy, just a random guy on Twitter.
Guy? Wow.
Who the guy was like, "You gotta change your name. It's not fair for Aaron Gordon to be confused with you.
What kind of crap is that?
Such a lousy writer." And the writer was like, "I'm not changing my name. I am already compromising by being Aaron W. Gordon."
Oh, so his name is not even Aaron Gordon. It's Aaron W. Gordon.
Aaron W. Gordon. He's already taking steps to not be confused. So, but apparently there is this whole thing where someone wants him to change his name. And he's like, no. And you know what? If in the future there is a Martin Bader that's like tearing it up in Italian soccer, I'm going to be like, hey, I came first. You change your Twitter handle. I'm staying the same. Yo, would you change your name into would you change it, Alex Dona?
No, I would not. Screw anybody who wants me to change my Twitter name. But it reminds me of something. One of the biggest stars in the UFC is John Bones Jones, John Jones. And his Twitter handle is at Johnny Bones. But there is just some random dude. He's like an accountant somewhere. Some random dude whose name is John Jones. And his Twitter handle is at John Jones. And every time the UFC's John Jones, you know, wins a big fight or fails a drug test or has a DUI or he's snorting the cocaine, he gets in a lot of trouble. Anytime something happens with the UFC's John Jones, the guy who's at John Jones on Twitter gets thousands of angry tweets, and he really seems to actually enjoy it. But I'm sure people have tried to ask that guy to change
his
Twitter handle.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think Aaron W. Gordon tries to slide into the DMs as Aaron Gordon?
Yes!
I want to know. That's the true mystery.
He's in Mia Khalifa's DMs. Like, he's sliding. See, that is good thinking, my friend.
No, you know who slid into DMs recently? Karl Anthony Towns. He actually put it up on Instagram, this whole series of steps he took to slide into this girl's Instagram DMs.
Oh, nice.
And he says that he did it successfully. So props
good
to
for
Towns.
Him.
Yeah,
good
in Minnesota.
That never worked for me. But
you're too much of a celebrity. That's
right. I can never slide in the DM.
They're intimidated by your success. You know, the pregame show tomorrow, you and Virginia Tech, the show tonight. And they're like, can I live up to Alex's expectations? And the answer is like, the bar is high. You know?
Exactly.
You got to put yourself high and be like, okay, you got to be at my level.
Hey, let people know where they can find you on social media and where they can find your work.
I'm Martin Bader SP. That's Bader with a B-A-T as in Thomas E-R. And, well, you know, my work is on ESPNDeportes.com. You can actually use Google Translate to read it.
See, that's
if
what
you
I
want
do.
To.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, I put out columns every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we also have content on other platforms, really, on ESPN.com, sometimes in English as well, and on the radio. So just be alert out there. I cover the NBA, I cover soccer, and I promise I'm going to make you laugh. I'm going to make you think. And,
that's right. You know.
Just looking forward to UM Virginia Tech tomorrow, too. I may not cover college football, but that's a huge game, and I'm looking forward to
it's
watching
gonna
it.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Will you enjoy that tomorrow? And, Martin, thank you so much for taking the time.
No problem. Anytime. And go Nerazzurri. I hope you guys
go.
Just
Icardi.
Keep going.
We need
Torino,
more goals
Torino
this
weekend.
Yeah, and they're going to have 70,000 plus at the San Siro in Milano, which is the biggest stadium in the Serie A. They could set records this week.
By the way, I look forward next time I'm here, Sweden, Italy. I want to talk about that.
Yes, absolutely.
The World Cup playoff, and that's going to be great.
You know, I'm a quarter Swedish, so I can celebrate if they win as well.
Oh, no. You got to choose sides.
I know, of course.
You can't just be like that.
Oh, man, I appreciate your time. The Alex Dono Show continues here on WQAM.
This podcast was presented by David Lowe and Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.